For sure she was working with us. I'd have to ponder the reasons for that later.
Dan, Brian continued, get Kyle to the van, and then you and Rachel see if you can secure the other two downed zombies. Minimal risk. Our priority is here.
He gave a chin nod toward Philip and me, then frowned at the distant sound of sirens.
Quickly.
A shudder went through Philip, and I sensed that it was from agony rather than the out-of-control frenzy state of earlier.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Kill me.
The words tumbled out of him in cracked and pain-filled sounds.
No more. Please.
My low growl shifted to a trilling hum. Very carefully and cautiously, I eased the pressure on the bite. Brian took a step closer and crouched.
Angel, he said quietly, we need to leave before the authorities arrive. Do you think you can get him to my vehicle?
I gave a slight nod, then released the bite completely and began to lick the wound. I knew it should have been weird and gross as all hell, but it wasn't. It was right. I tried not to think too much about that. A moaning sob caught in Philip's throat.
Done. Can't take it anymore. Kill me.
Trust me, I murmured, continuing to lick the bite, though totally ready to clamp down again if he started to freak out. I'll take care of you. He bowed his head and went still except for a heavy, generalized shaking. Taking that as consent, I slowly unwrapped my legs from him, though I still kept hold with my arms. Come on, I said as I gently tugged to get him to stand. I won't leave you. Brian straightened, swept his gaze around to check on the progress of his people. Apparently he was pleased with their results because he returned his attention to us.
All right, Angel, he said, still outwardly calm, but I heard a hint of an edge in his voice. Everyone else is in the van, and we need to go before the police get here.
Philip stood, swayed slightly while I kept an arm around his waist. His gaze rested on Brian, and he growled, but subsided when I smacked him on the chest. Behave, I ordered. You have to trust me. A tremor shook him, and I bared my teeth up at him. I knew we had to look pretty damn ridiculous. Philip was at least a foot taller and weighed about twice as much as me, but he allowed me to steer him in the direction Brian indicated, though he maintained an audible growl as we moved. By the time we reached Brian's Escalade, Philip's growl had begun to develop the wet rasp that told me lung tissue was beginning to break down. I got him into the back seat, buckled him in like a kid, then slipped an arm around his waist and draped a leg over his, maintaining as much contact with him as possible. Then I fished another bag of slushy brains out of my pocket and held it for my great big zombie kid to eat as Brian drove us away from the school. I lost my virginity on the football field of East St. Edward's High School and had been kidnapped from that same place years later. And now I'd just been in the thick of a crazed zombie mob on the Tucker Point High football field. Might be best for everyone if I avoided football in general from now on.
Chapter 24.
I expected Brian to head to the same lab I'd visited the other day, where I'd seen Kang's head and met Dr. Nikas, but instead, he stopped after about 2 minutes of driving and pulled up to a loading dock behind an old brick warehouse. It bugged me that the area looked familiar, and it wasn't until I caught sight of the battered sign by the street that I realized we were on the back end of the building I'd followed Philip to last night, where he'd begged Cherish for brains. Damn good thing we'd come here instead of the other lab. I didn't think Philip could tolerate a long drive, and apparently Brian thought the same. Brian parked and came around to open the rear passenger door as I finished stuffing the last of the brains into Philip's mouth.
Let's go, Philip, I said. We're going inside. We'll fix you up.
He managed a tight nod, pain flashing across his face from even that small movement. I quickly unbuckled him, then helped him out of the SUV with Brian's assistance. Philip didn't growl at him, which was damn good since I didn't know enough about the bite thing to be sure it would work again to calm him down. As soon as Philip was somewhat steady, Brian backed off and led the way to the back door.
It was opened before we reached it by the door security guy from last night, so apparently we were expected. That's it, I murmured to the very unsteady Philip, keeping an arm around him. Almost there. Brian led the way inside and down a short hallway to a small room with lab equipment and a single computer workstation. Two narrow mattresses, obviously dragged in from elsewhere, dominated the floor space. I glanced up at Philip's face as we walked. My gut clenched at the rigor of pain and concentration I saw there. Every moment was agonizing, yet he suffered in silence. Angel, Brian said, if you can get him on a mattress, that would be ideal. I gave him a quick nod to acknowledge I'd heard. Okay, Philip, darling, I said, maneuvering him to the nearest mattress. I need you to lie down now, and then you can be nice and still, okay? He sank to the mattress, knees buckling at the end and near collapsing the last foot or so. A wrenching cry of despair that was echoed in his eyes nearly broke my heart. I lay down beside him, keeping as much contact along his side as I could without putting pressure on him that might cause more pain. A few seconds later, I heard low voices and footsteps from the hallway we'd entered through, and then Heather and Dan appeared, practically carrying Kyle between them. His head lulled, but his eyes were open, and he seemed to be trying his damnedest to make his legs work well enough to walk. Heather gave me a quick wink, then helped Dan get Kyle settled onto the other mattress.
Do you need brains?
Dan asked Kyle, but the other man shook his head in a drunken gesture.
Strange,
Kyle slurred.
Not hungry at all.
Dan's mouth pressed tight.
Not normal, Trank, that's for sure.
The mods did nothing,
Kyle continued, obviously focusing heavily on speaking as clearly as possible, with only partial success.
Knocked me down in seconds.
Mods? That must have something to do with why he was surprised the Trank affected him. Some sort of antidote, maybe? I turned my head toward them. I got hit with that stuff the other night, I said quietly in order to not disturb Philip. It takes some time to wear off. The non-hunger, that is. Brains will be gross for a while. Dan glanced at me.
Good to know.
He looked back to Kyle.
You hear that? Just gotta wait it out.
Got it,
Kyle muttered. His hands and feet kept twitching, and it took me several seconds to realize he was consciously moving his fingers and toes in order to get his motor control back faster. The fact that he was awake, but still without full motor control, seemed odd to me. I'd been knocked out, yet as soon as I woke, I was able to drive and move around with no trouble. Did it have something to do with the mods he'd mentioned? Perhaps he had an adverse reaction? Philip tremored beside me, breath hissing between his teeth. I kept a hand on his shoulder while I let my gaze roam around the room, taking it all in. Heather sat beside Kyle's mattress with a hand on his arm. Dan stood by the wall, arms folded over his chest, watching, and I had the feeling he was primed and ready to respond to anything that came up. The door guard fiddled with a computer that showed the outside surveillance camera feeds, and Rachel checked out the monitor over his shoulder. With the mattresses taking up much of the floor space, the small room was downright crowded. A soft intake of breath from the doorway drew my attention. Dr. Christy fucking Cherish stood there, a look of slight surprise on her face as she registered my presence. I felt my lips pull back from my teeth in a snarl of hatred. Pietro had told me he had this bitch under his control, but she looked pretty damn uncontrolled to me. Slowly, I lifted my hand and gave her the finger. Her face instantly shifted from surprise to practiced coolness. Her gaze went from me to Philip. A flicker of distaste passed over her features, sliding to a smirk of satisfaction as she looked back to me. She held my gaze for several seconds, then turned away and moved out of sight. What the hell did that bitch have to look satisfied about? Before I could wonder about it much more, Brian came back in, a frown tugging at his mouth.
Dr. Nikus is on his way, and there are too many people in here, he announced. Dan, Rachel, wait outside but stay close.
The two quickly complied. I gave Brian a puzzled look but held my questions. His gaze flicked to Heather, and then to me. I half expected him to ask the two of us to leave, and I tensed for an argument since there was no damn way I was leaving Philip right now. but apparently Brian figured we were doing more good than harm. He moved to me and crouched.
Dr. Nikas doesn't do well in crowds, he explained in a low voice. His eyes went to Philip, and sympathetic anger flared behind them. Then he stood, turned, and went to one knee beside Kyle. Heather looked up at Brian, gave Kyle's arm a little squeeze. He's still not able to move much, though it does seem to be wearing off. Brian's head dipped in a small nod. We don't know what was used or how it interacts with Kyle's mods, he said, so it may simply take more time. I can't see Saberton using anything that would permanently harm a useful zombie.
Philip shuddered beside me.
Cherish would did,
he rasped out, voice thick with pain. I looked back to him. She's a fucking bitch, I muttered. His nostrils suddenly flared, and he let out a low, ominous growl. He shifted, pushing up on his arms, half-twisting to face the open doorway. He knew she was there, could smell her or something. I felt the fury roiling through him, and had no doubt that, despite the pain, he'd rip her to pieces if he could get his hands on her. I wrapped my arms around him from behind and sank my teeth into his shoulder again, though there was a nasty part of me that wanted to leave him be and wish him good hunting. Oops, couldn't control him, sorry. However, the practical side of me knew I might not be able to bring him back down after he rage-shredded Cherish, and I didn't want to be responsible for anyone else getting hurt. But Philip wasn't as easily subdued this time. He managed to push up to his knees while I clung to his back and bit harder. I sensed Brian near and ready to act in case I couldn't bring Philip under control, but to my relief, after a few seconds, Philip let out a low moan and sank down to lie on his belly.
Was fine, he rasped,
breathing harshly.
Was good. Strong after you turned me. She did this to me.
I let out a low growl of understanding, then released the bite and licked at the sluggishly bleeding wound. Still not gross, I thought idly. Too weird. I remained partially atop him, not that my piddling weight would slow him down if he went off again, but the physical contact seemed to keep him a bit calmer, though he still jerked and twitched. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Dr. Nikas enter, followed by Jacques, the pale tech who'd taken my blood at the other lab. Dr. Nikas paused as he took in the sights, and probably scents and sounds as well. He went to Kyle first, knelt by the mattress, and placed a hand in the center of the stricken man's chest.
How is it?
He asked.
Movement returning?
Slowly, Kyle replied. Very slowly.
Dr. Nikas gave a small nod.
I suspect they hit you with a new trank, but if you feel stable, I'm going to go take care of Philip.
I'm stable enough,
Kyle said to my relief.
Tend to him.
Dr. Nikas stood and moved to us, eyes going first to the deep bite marks on Philip's shoulder as he knelt. I shifted off to Philip's other side, and Dr. Nikas placed a hand in the center of his back.
Philip, can you hear me?
He asked.
I can hear you, Dr. Nikas.
He gasped out, then squeezed his eyes shut.
Please end this, please.
His voice cracked horribly on the last word.
I will,
Dr. Nikas replied, calmly and firmly. He met my eyes, and to my relief, I saw full confidence that he could help Philip, and that he intended Philip's death to be an utter last resort.
Let's get you to your back first,
he told Philip, and with my help, we got him turned over on the mattress. Dr. Nikas looked at Jacques, and rattled off some instructions that included words like red-top stabilizers and large-bore IV and 500 mL normal saline. Jacques hurried off to comply with the instructions, and Dr. Nikas returned his gaze to me.
Angel, are you willing to stay with Philip for a short time?
Totally, I said. But can someone call Marcus and let him and my dad know I'm okay and might be a while? Dr. Nikas glanced at Brian, who gave a nod.
I'm on it, he said, pulling out his phone as he stepped into the hallway to make the call.
Jacques returned and set up an IV with several bags, flowing into the tube thingy in Philip's arm. I frowned. How do you keep his body from healing up around the IV? Jacques didn't look up from his adjustments.
Needle and catheter have a camouflaging coating that keeps the parasite from reacting to it. Dr. Nikas' development.
He stuck three patches on Philip's chest and switched on the heart monitor, then stood and retreated to the computer workstation. Dr. Nikas filled a syringe from a vial and injected it into the saline bag.
Philip, as soon as the bag finishes, I'm going to set up a drip of a new formulation. It'll take a couple of hours, but let me know immediately if it makes anything worse.
Yes, sir,
Philip murmured, eyes already drifting closed.
Thank you.
He already seemed to be better, and I had to hope it wasn't simply my wishful thinking. Dr. Nikas stood and returned to Kyle. Carefully, he picked up the container holding the dart that had struck him.
Excellent, Kyle,
he said.
This will give us a cleaner sample to analyze, and hopefully a better idea of how this tranquilizer operates.
Heather's lips twitched.
Way to take one for the team, Kyle. We can tell everyone you got tranked on purpose.
Kyle muttered something I couldn't hear, but I had no doubt the gist of it involved curse words. Dr. Nikas gave Kyle's shoulder an absent pat, then turned and headed toward the doorway, expression hardening. I had no shame, and I quickly grabbed one of the packets of brains Dan had left for me and sucked it down. I was pretty sure Dr. Nikas was about to confront Cherish, and I wanted some super zombie hearing right about now. It kicked in barely in time.
Tell me what happened to Philip,
I heard Dr. Nikas say in a calm, even voice. Lucky for me, Cherish had apparently been lurking just beyond the doorway. No wonder Philip had nearly lost it.
I don't know. He's always been unstable,
Cherish replied, and even though I couldn't see her, I had no trouble picturing the frown laced with the perfect amount of professional concern.
What happened when he came here last night?
Dr. Nikas asked.
Oh, my God. Can you believe he showed up here? She said, outrage thick in her voice.
She huffed out a breath.
Begging, no less. He wasted all the supplies you'd left for him and claimed he was starving. I gave him some simply to get him to leave and keep from totally compromising us.
Dr. Nikas remained quiet for a few seconds before asking,
why in God's name did you not give him more?
My zombie superhearing picked up footfalls, and I easily pictured him stepping closer to her.
Do you think he was lying about being hungry? That perhaps he sold the brains I gave him on the street like pain meds?
Well, he didn't sound so calm anymore.
No, Cherish said. He obviously wasn't rationing them properly. I gave him two, and Saberton fed him as well. He simply had to hold it together for a couple of days, that's all.
She made an aggrieved sound.
Why would I waste valuable resources on a stupid zombie grunt, and an expendable one at that?
Holy fucking shit, I thought, stunned. She did not just say that.
Stupid zombie grunt?
Dr. Nikas bit the words out, and the anger in his voice sounded utterly foreign coming from him.
You call a highly skilled man who volunteered for extremely hazardous duty, suffered your botched efforts, and who managed to endure agony and extreme hunger without undue complaint, a stupid zombie grunt?
I heard a clatter, and I figured Dr. Nikas had backed her into a counter or something.
I don't understand,
Cherish said, and for the first time sounded a little afraid and genuinely perplexed.
You were going to terminate him tomorrow, and volunteered? What do you mean? For what?
Terminate?
Utter astonishment laced the word.
I never had any intention of terminating him. You don't terminate your own people.
Dr. Nikas drew a shaking breath, obviously struggling for calm.
Why did you give the accelerant instead of the stabilizer?
I didn't, she cried.
You are lying, he said through clenched teeth. The two are kept in separate locations, look completely different from each other. Tell me why you sent an operative back into the field with a substance that could damage him and his mission.
I thought he was just a mule, she replied, voice cracking in a way that told me she had tears going on now, bitch.
I glanced around the room to see that I wasn't the only one carefully eavesdropping. Brian stood by the wall, arms folded over his chest and eyes closed, but his jaw was clenched so tightly I thought he might break a tooth. Kyle's eyes were on the doorway, brow ever so slightly furrowed. He probably wasn't tanked up to where he could hear it all, but enough to get the gist.
I didn't know he was an operative, I swear, Cherish continued, crying now. You said you're going to take care of him, and I thought you meant kill him.
She sniffled.
Ari, I was so tired that night, and upset that he'd come to the lab. Anyone could have followed him.
Like me, bitch. Because you thought him to be an expendable grunt, you chose to punish him. For a brilliant woman, you are remarkably stupid. Dr. Naka said, voice tight. Brian? He called. Brian pushed off the wall, face instantly composed into a neutral mask that completely hid that he'd heard everything and how pissed he was. He moved to the doorway.
Yes, sir.
Remove Dr. Cherish from these premises until decision can be made as to her disposition. He paused, and I heard Cherish suck in a shocked breath. And in the meantime, he continued, she is to have no more than 300 calories a day.
Ari, no!
Cherish gasped while I silently cheered. 300 calories a day? I knew damn well Dr. Nikas ordered that so Cherish would get a hint of what real hunger felt like.
Yes, sir,
Brian replied evenly.
Secure cell, sir,
he added, emphasizing the word cell a bit, and I had no doubt he'd done so simply to fuck with her.
Most definitely, Dr. Nikas replied.
No, Ari. Oh, God, please. You can't do this. Pietro will... Oh, God.
She was crying for real now, which surprised me. She struck me as the type to go cold and shut down. Maybe the thought of what Pietro would do to her scared the ice right out of her.
I made the grievous error of trusting you with my interest,
Dr. Nikas said with undisguised reproach in his voice.
I will not do so again.
I heard a muffled whimper, and then Brian said,
This way, Dr. Cherish.
A few seconds later, he came through the doorway, escorting her with a firm grip on her upper arm. Her hands had been secured behind her back with zip ties, I noted as they passed. I didn't bother to hide the fact that I openly watched her be escorted out. No one in the room was hiding it, Philip included. Halfway to the exit, she began to struggle and tried to pull away from Brian.
No, no, this isn't right.
Brian visibly tightened his grip, fingers digging in.
Walk or be dragged.
She let out a low cry.
You're hurting me, she said, stumbling forward again. Ari didn't say to hurt me.
He didn't have to,
was his utterly calm reply as they exited. A few seconds later, the outer door clanged shut. Couldn't happen to a nicer person, I muttered. Philip made a low noise.
Shifting up onto one elbow, I peered down at him.
Is it getting any better? I asked quietly.
Really dizzy, all of a sudden,
he said, voice definitely sounding more clear than earlier. Dr. Nikas? I called. He stepped into the doorway, and I was shocked to see that he looked anguished. He liked Dr. Cherish, I realized with a start. Or at least he had before today. I had a hard time wrapping my head around the kind and gentle Dr. Nikas finding anything at all appealing about that woman, but obviously there'd been something there. He'd called her brilliant. Had that been it? Straightening his shoulders, he moved to Philip's side and crouched.
What is it?
He says he's really dizzy all of a sudden, I told him. Dr. Nikas checked the IV and monitoring devices, looked into Philip's eyes.
Other than the dizziness, feeling better or worse overall?
Thinking clearer. Pain's easing some, too, maybe, Philip said. Hard to tell, but I don't think it hurts quite so much.
All of your vitals look good, Dr. Nakis said with an encouraging smile. I'm going to slow the drip down a bit, and I've started a mild sedative. If you can sleep, do so. It will be a few hours until you're back to your normal level of stability.
Philip managed a whisper of a smile.
I'm more than ready to sleep. Thanks for having my back.
He took a deeper breath.
I'm sorry, Dr. Nikas, for all this. 2 days ago, Saberton cut out all real brains from me, and Tim and Roland only gave us their current alternative. I wouldn't eat them, didn't dare, he said. I used up everything you'd left for me, then was starving. Should have signaled. Wasn't thinking straight, and got desperate.
Understandable, Dr. Nakis said.
We'll take good care of you now. I'm sorry you didn't get what you needed when you came here last night.
He gave Philip's shoulder a light squeeze, then looked over at me.
Angel, may I speak with you a moment?
I glanced down at Philip. The corner of his mouth twitched in a mild tick, but the general tremors had stopped, and he almost looked at peace. I checked in with my zombie mama intuition, but it seemed to agree and didn't urge me to stay by his side. Giving a nod to Dr. Nikas, I pulled a blanket over Philip, then stood and followed him as he passed through the doorway, down the hall, and finally into a small office. He closed the door behind us and opened his mouth to speak, but I beat him to it.
Why didn't y'all put a stop to the testing Saberton was doing? I asked, frowning. Those people didn't volunteer. That fake zombie shit really fucked them up. A woman died because of it.
He let out a low sigh.
We were working on it, Angel. That was part of the reason Philip was undercover with him.
My eyes narrowed. Working on it. Really? I liked Dr. Nikas, but that didn't mean I was going to let this slide. It looked more like Philip was undercover to steal their results and pass them to y'all.
Dr. Nikas exhaled and rubbed his eyes.
Yes, but part of what he passed to us were details that we hoped would help us to undermine their operation as a whole, not merely that small segment.
He dropped his hand, expression pained.
The research was happening whether I liked it or not.
To refuse to use the data for some misguided moral reason and leave it to Saberton exclusively would be irresponsible.
I fell silent for a moment. The low tick of a clock on the wall seemed to reverberate through the small room while I tried to make everything fit into a pattern I could handle.
Was it useful? I finally asked, voice low. The data. Was it worth it?
He gave a grave nod.
Every bit of data, every sample helps. I know the direction they're going with their research and have projects underway based on it. And to counter it, invaluable.
But then he shook his head, looking suddenly weary.
Was it worth the death of Brenda Barnes? No, she was an innocent.
Dr. Nikas knew the name of the woman who died as part of that horrible research. That, along with everything else I'd seen of him, convinced me that he actually did give a shit. I blew out my breath. I guess Philip's meltdown put an end to that project anyway. At least for now. A faint smile touched his mouth.
Yes. Not at all in the way I'd hoped to extract him, but they will be disrupted for a time.
His eyes met mine.
He needs much care. You were kind enough to give me a small sample of blood at the main lab the other day. He said, would you consider giving a pint? It could be crucial in developing a more effective stabilizer for Philip.
He already had samples of my blood. I couldn't see any harm in giving him more. Sure thing.
I am not certain yet if it will help, he cautioned, but I'd prefer to have it on hand as I work with his issues.
If there's a chance it'll help Philip, I'll do it, I replied, then frowned. What about the two others? The ones Philip turned? Tim Bell and Roland Westfield? He exhaled.
I haven't had a chance to fully determine the nature of their condition, he explained. How they were converted was perverse.
and I don't know yet if their damage can be reversed or even stabilized.
His brow creased.
And they are Sableton men.
They stood and watched me get strip searched, I said quietly, looking away. Maybe it makes me an awful person, but I guess I don't have much sympathy for them right now. I sighed and looked back to him. But I really do hope you can do something good for Philip. Dr. Nikas nodded slowly.
Before those two were poorly converted, their view of zombies was likely much in line with Dr. Cherish's, occasionally useful, second-class citizens.
His mouth tightened, and he shook his head.
Pietro will make the final decision on what happens to them, based on my assessment. As for Philip, yes, I can help him to at least not be in continuous pain, and to curb the unnatural hunger. In time, I may discover a way to fully reverse the damage. Your blood will help.
I considered all that in silence for a moment. The two men were seriously damaged. They didn't seem to have the same degree of pain issues that Philip had, but they were unstable and bitey as hell. I definitely saw how dangerous it was to have them roaming around with such screwed up parasites. Thankfully, it didn't seem like they'd converted any others into messed up zombies. Maybe the parasite was too damaged to spawn.
But isn't condemning them to death for being too damaged treating them like second-class citizens and less than human?
There were no easy answers. That much was for sure. I tugged a hand through my hair, then looked up at Dr. Nikas, brow furrowed.
Why did Philip calm down when I bit him?
It was his turn to go quiet for a moment.
Technically, he shouldn't have,
he finally said. That only confused me more. What does that mean? I don't even know why I did it. It just felt right. Dr. Nikas drew a breath, hesitated, then shook his head and spread his hands.
It is a characteristic that should not manifest in a young zombie.
I regarded him as steadily as I could.
And what does that mean?
He met my eyes with one of those I'm ancient as all hell gazes that I'd received a time or two from Pietro.
It means that I have never seen a zombie less than 500 years old with the instinct and ability to inflict a control bite.
I gaped as I tried to get the implications of this tidbit of info to fit into my worldview. First off, that meant there were zombies over 500 years old, likely including Dr. Nikas and Pietro. I'd known zombies had the potential to live a long time, but having an actual number from someone who no doubt knew the truth blew my mind. But even that seemed minor compared to the fact that, somehow, little old not even a year old zombie me was able to do some zombie judo hold that normally only grand poobah zombies could do. What the hell did that mean for me? Dr. Nikas pushed off the counter, gave me a sad little smile.
We can talk about this more later, if you're still willing.
I'll have Jacques take your blood, and then Brian can drive you home.
Home? Right. Wherever the hell that was. Sure thing, I replied numbly. He gave me a small nod, then turned and left me alone with my roiling thoughts.
Chapter 25.
I gave a pint of my blood to Jacques, accepted a packet of brains in return, then checked on Philip. He seemed to be sleeping comfortably, and the lines of pain in his face had smoothed out a bit. After twitching the blanket a bit higher over his shoulders, I looked over to the waiting Brian. Are you my ride?
Whenever you're ready, he replied. No rush.
Kyle was resting quietly. Heather lay stretched out on the mattress beside him, reading to him in a low voice from a book called Abaddon's Gate, with a big spaceship on the cover. They weren't cuddling or anything, but I didn't think Brian was thrilled about it anyway. A whisper of an expression that might have been jealousy touched his face, but disappeared the instant he realized I was looking at him. Ooh, Brian really does like Heather, my inner third grader cheered. But then I had to mask a grin. It was only fair to leave open the possibility that it was Kyle who Brian liked. Either way, it seemed there might be some zombie soap opera brewing.
Still hiding a smile, I exited the lab with Brian close behind, headed to his Escalade, and allowed him to hold the passenger door open for me, but only because he beat me there.
To Marcus's house? Brian asked, after he climbed into the driver's seat, and it took me a minute to remember why the heck he wanted to drive me there instead of my own house.
Oh, yeah, right, I said. My house is probably somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico by now.
And so now I'm gonna stay with Marcus. I held back a grimace. This had the potential to be awkward. After the attack at the boat launch, I'd spent the night with him, but that had been the first time in ages, and now I was about to basically move in for who the hell knew how long.
I'm sorry, Brian said. You've had a devastating couple of days.
It sure hasn't been the best week of my life, I said, then shook my head. No, actually, it was a pretty decent week, even with all the Saberton crap. It was only a few hours on Friday morning that sucked sweaty balls. Brian let out a low snort.
That land you are living on, do you own it?
Well, my dad does, yeah, I replied. So it'd be stupid not to stay there. I shook my head. It was all right for ordinary flood levels. The spillway break was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, I winced. At least I sure as hell hope so. Anyway, I'm hoping I can buy a trailer or something and put it there.
They have some pretty nice ones these days, Brian offered, and modular housing that doesn't look like a trailer.
Even if I want to get a shitty one, I'm going to have to borrow money, I scowled. Damn, this sucks. The only person in the world who might be willing to loan me money would maybe be Pietro, and... I trailed off with a sigh. Brian glanced over at me.
And?
I don't know if I want the strings that would come with it, I said quietly.
Maybe find out what the strings will be before writing off the possibility, Brian replied.
At least he wasn't denying that said strings would exist.
Can't hurt to talk to him. You don't have to commit to anything.
Oh, I intend to talk to him. I don't really have a choice, do I? I shook my head. That's the worst part. I don't have a choice. Who the hell else would write me or my dad a loan to buy even a crappy used trailer at rates that aren't criminal?
I see what you mean, Brian said, exhaling. But the alternative, having no resource at all, would be worse. And yes, I know I'm biased.
He gave me a slight smile.
I know, I replied, wrinkling my nose.
I'm lucky to even have this option. Don't mind me, I'm being stupid. I was lucky, I knew that. How do people without credit or collateral or other options go about rebuilding after a disaster?
Not stupid, he said. Simply wary of walking open-eyed into a trap. I get it.
Right, I said. I've done that kind of thing already, and it wasn't fun. Like trading myself for my dad to end up as one of Dr. Cherish's lab rats. I didn't regret doing so for a second, but damn, that had not been fun. Brian cleared his throat softly.
I owe you an apology.
Frowning, I glanced over at him. What do you mean? He kept his eyes on the road.
About what happened to you with Christy Cherish and McKinney. I missed identifying McKinney as William Rook, an operative working for Saberton at the time.
His hands tightened briefly on the steering wheel.
Cherish hired him not knowing who he was, Brian continued. McKinney got the info he needed and put her together with Saberton. The rest progressed from there.
I took that in, then shook my head. Cherish would have still found a way to fuck Pietro over. You can't blame yourself for that.
I don't dwell on it, but I damn sure haven't forgotten it.
Brian said, jaw tight.
Rook was good, really good at what he did.
Sighing, he shook his head.
If I'd uncovered him at any point, it would have saved a lot of loss, and certainly would have kept you out of that situation. Maybe even cut off Cherish before she gave too much to Saberton.
He slanted a glance my way.
Only speculation now, though. Didn't have her under close enough supervision. I've tightened everything up since then.
All this corporate espionage shit is pretty crazy, I said. Like the whole business with Philip. Brian gave a slight nod.
He endured a great deal and gained us a tremendous advantage.
Right, I said. But, Pietro said something that I've been thinking about. Philip was undercover with Saberton before I got kidnapped, right? Apparently Brian knew exactly where I was going with this.
You want to know why Pietro left you in that lab, if he knew what was going on?
I smiled tightly. Something like that?
Basically, he didn't know.
Brian said, I gave him a dubious look, and he continued.
Philip managed to get onto the volunteer list for Cheris's project by some devious sleight of hand, and was only able to send a very terse message to that effect before he was taken to Cheris's lab at that factory. And once there, he had no opportunity to get a message out with details or location.
He looked over at me.
Angel, I give you my word on this.
I hesitated, then nodded slowly. I trusted Brian to tell me the truth, at least as far as he knew it. Okay. I fell silent for the rest of the drive. I'd thought I'd known how high the stakes were for Pietro and zombies in general, but in reality, they were higher than I could have ever imagined. It wasn't simply Pietro versus Saberton. The safety of every zombie, as well as our ability to live relatively normal lives and blend in with regular society, depended on guarding our secrets and being the first to make the advances such as fake brains and ways to modify the parasite. Pietro had to be ruthless for a reason, and I truly did understand it. So maybe it was time for me to let go of some of my grudges. Even if I could possibly live a couple hundred years, life was still too damn short to cling to regrets or old anger. Maybe that was maturity, understanding that even the bad shit makes you who you are. Maturity still sucked. And though I was ready to forgive Pietro, that didn't mean I had to trust him farther than I could throw him. Maturity didn't have to equal stupidity. We pulled into Marcus's driveway, and Brian put the Escalade into park. Thanks for the drive, I said, and for listening to me whine.
You're welcome, Angel,
he replied.
And you have my number if you ever need anything.
No, I don't anymore, actually. Flood got it, too. He pulled out a new card, then wrote another number on the back.
If it's an emergency, and you can't get me, call that number and tell them 113 Archer. That will ensure you get assistance.
I took the card, nodded. Sometimes those strings attached could be lifelines as well. Marcus barreled out of the house and rushed to me, crutches and all, as I climbed out of the SUV.
Angel.
He gave a quick nod of thanks to Brian, but stopped before pulling me into a hug. Instead, he simply took hold of my shoulders.
I've been worried sick about you. Sarge was supposed to go by for you last night, but got called to deal with looters.
Uncertainty warred with relief in his eyes. I abruptly remembered that our last conversation had been oh so less than pleasant, and because I'd hung up on him, he didn't know where we stood. All that seemed like a million years ago. I slipped my arms around him and pulled him close. I felt a shudder of relief pass through him as he dropped the crutches and returned the embrace. It's okay, hero, I murmured. It's been a weird couple of days, for sure. I drew back to look into his face. My dad is here, right? Is he okay?
He's watching TV in the guest room,
Marcus told me.
He's fine. How about you?
His brow creased.
What happened to you today?
Brian cleared his throat softly.
Angel, I'll be going now.
I glanced over, smiled. Thanks, Brian. He gave us a nod as I closed the passenger door, his professional mask in place while he backed out. Was the official air for Marcus's benefit? Brian had certainly been more relaxed with me alone. Or maybe it was simply habit. Who could tell with him? After retrieving the crutches, Marcus and I headed inside where he immediately tossed the crutches into the corner and stumped along on his half-cast. It must suck having to wear a cast, I said. Marcus nodded.
Yeah, everything went fine until the car shifted and caught my leg,
he said as we settled onto the couch.
Fortunately, Uncle Pietro has a doctor lined up for us to take care of hospital red tape. Can't get out of having an injury, but it keeps too many questions from being asked.
Now that was pretty damn useful.
There was a lot I still didn't know about the workings of the zombie subculture, but Pietro seemed to have his fingers in a lot of it. Then again, if he'd been around for centuries or so, it made sense that he'd have made plans for stuff like that. Well, I'm glad you're in one piece, and saved that family, I told him with a kiss. He returned it enthusiastically as we settled on the couch, but before we could get too distracted, I paused the general naughtiness and proceeded to give him a rundown of the events of the past few days. The firefighter on Highway 1790, Philip Undercover, Saberton and their shenanigans, the movie extras as test subjects, Philip freaking out and the resulting mayhem on the movie set, Dr. Cherish and her fuck-ups. I didn't hold anything back, though I was well aware how outlandish some of it seemed. I figured that if Pietro didn't want Marcus to know all of it, that was his own damn problem, and he should have warned me.
Shit, Marcus breathed when I finished. Uncle Pietro had all of that going on.
To my relief, he seemed to accept the whole thing without question, even the parts that sounded batshit crazy. Yeah, it was a mess. I rubbed at my eyes. The fatigue was starting to catch up with me. I need to check on my dad. Marcus nodded.
He's in the guest bedroom at the end of the hall.
I left Marcus on the couch and headed that way. The door was open, and my dad sat in a comfy-looking recliner watching TV. Hey, Dad, you doing okay? I asked. I searched for any hint of anger or his usual orneriness, but apparently, having a plush recliner and a flat screen went a long way toward pacifying him. He looked over, gave me a slight smile. Hey, Angelkins, I'm doing fine. So, everything's cool between you and Marcus? His bony shoulders lifted in a shrug. We had a few words. He paused. More than a few. But I'm sitting in his house, so that should tell you something. Yeah, I guess it does. I didn't even want to think of what words had been exchanged. Look, I'm going to ask Pietro Ivanov if he'll co-sign a loan for me. He frowned. Why the hell would someone like that help you out with a loan? The frown shifted to a familiar scowl. And damn it, I don't want to be sucking up to any Ivanovs. I leaned against the doorframe, crossed my arms over my chest. You think a bank will hand over enough to put our lives back together? I asked. A grimace deepened the lines in his face. No, you're right. No chance with a bank. I'm hoping Pietro will help since he's, like me and Marcus. Shit. His jaw actually dropped a little. You mean he's a... Yeah, I said. He's the one who made Marcus, like him, a zombie. My dad let out a low whistle. Jesus Christ. He narrowed his eyes at me. How many of, you lot are there? I had to stop and think about that. I don't really know, actually. I think there's maybe a dozen or so in this area, I hedged. I had a feeling there was a higher concentration around here because of Pietro's operation and support. It surely couldn't be as high everywhere. There simply wouldn't be enough brains to feed everyone. Plus, if there were a whole lot of zombies spread out everywhere, it would be impossible to keep it hidden from the general public. That's too damn weird, he muttered. Y'all have meetings or anything? I let out a bark of laughter at the thought. Zombies Anonymous? Hello, my name is Angel, and it's been 3 weeks since I've shambled. No, I said, grinning. At least none that I've been invited to. He merely snorted. Don't let the bastards leave you out, Angel. You're better than any of them. A sudden jolt of worry went through me. Dad? You know you can't tell anyone about me being a zombie, right? Or about Marcus or Pietro either. Shit. I'd outed both of them without even thinking, and there wasn't any good reason for doing it. I mean, I trusted my dad, but I needed to be more careful. He laughed. Like anyone would believe me? But then he saw my anxious expression and sobered. Won't tell a soul, Angel. Wouldn't do anything that might come back to bite you in the ass. Promise you that. Thanks, Dad. I moved to him, gave him a hug. He felt more solid than he had in a long time.
He clung to me for a moment, then let me go.
I quickly turned and left before either of us could get all weepy. Marcus was still on the couch. I sat and regarded him, brow furrowed. "So how is this going to work with me and my dad staying here?" I asked. "I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm really grateful, but..." I trailed off, not quite sure what else to say.
"Your dad is settled in the guest room just fine," Marcus told me. "I have plenty of space."
He pushed a strand of hair back from my face.
"This isn't us moving in together. I know you aren't ready for that. We aren't ready for that."
Relief swept over me. I'd been dreading this conversation, totally uncertain how to lay out my misgivings without insulting him or screwing things up, and here he was being all understanding. "I don't know how long it'll be before I can find me and my dad another place to live," I said.
"It's a 3-bedroom house."
He gave me a soft smile.
"I promise I won't pressure you."
Then he shook his head.
"Or rather, I promise I'll do my very best not to pressure you,"
he amended.
"I'm crazy about you, Angel. I can't shut that down."
I kissed him, smiled. "And I'm crazy about you, too. And I think I know why you sometimes get too overprotective." At his questioning look, I proceeded to tell him about my theory of zombie mama instinct with Philip. Marcus seemed a bit doubtful, and perhaps a teensy bit jealous when I spoke of Philip, but in the end he simply gave a serious nod.
"As much as I'd love to let the parasite take full responsibility, I'm not sure I can,"
he said to my surprise. He gave me an uneasy smile.
"It couldn't have influenced my one-sided decision to turn you, since I wasn't your zombie daddy yet. And the heavy-handed shit of blackmailing you into taking the job at the morgue? Yeah, the instinct might have had a role, but it was probably more me just being a superior dick and giving you a great teaching moment."
Then he took a deep breath, met my eyes.
"And even if all the stuff later was because of some kind of instinct? God, Angel, you've come so far in the past year. I know it's stupid and wrong to treat you like you don't know what the hell you're doing. You deserve better than that. And I promise I'll try my damnedest to throttle it back, whether it's instinct or simple dickishness on my part."
I believed him. "And I promise I'll give you many chances to do so." I smiled, gave his hand a squeeze. "I need to meet with your uncle to ask him about co-signing a loan for me," I said, then extended a big, horkin' olive branch by adding, "Would you call him for me?" Marcus kissed me, a lovely lingering kiss.
"No, you should call him,"
he said, handing the entire olive tree back to me. And so I did. Pietro seemed unsurprised by my desire for a meeting, and I suspected that Brian had already given him a heads up. After a polite inquiry about how I was doing post-zombie mayhem, he told me he'd send a car for me at 10 the next morning. With that taken care of, I snuggled up against Marcus. "I really like you a lot." He slipped an arm around me.
"Is there a butt coming?"
"Nope. No butts," I said. "I'm too exhausted to deal with butts." I frowned. "That sounds weird."
"Yes, it does,"
he said, laughing.
"All you need to do right now is rest."
My eyes closed. Now that I'd stopped moving and knew my dad was all right, the fatigue swept in with crushing force. "Yeah," I mumbled. "Rest would be cool." I heard Marcus ask me something, but I was already well on my way to sleep, and apparently he didn't need the answer badly enough to wake me up. Sometime later, I woke in a bed that wasn't my own and wasn't Marcus's either. A clock nearby told me it was 1:14 in the morning, and a few more seconds of semi-coherent thinking informed me that I was on a futon in Marcus's office. I smiled into the darkness. He wasn't pressuring me. I got up, headed down the hallway to Marcus's room, and crawled under the covers to snuggle with him. He woke, blinked at me.
"Angel?"
he asked in a voice thick with sleep.
"You okay?"
"More than okay," I told him. "Now shut up and hold me." And he did.
Chapter 26.
I half expected some awkwardness in the morning, but Marcus was already cooking eggs when I woke up and shambled into the kitchen. He had on shorts, his cast, and nothing else, and he looked seriously hot. He gave me a smile.
I'm making zomblets. Want one?
Zomblets? Then my brain kicked into gear. Oh, zombie omelet? Eggs and brains?
That's right, he replied, chuckling.
At my approving nod, he pulled another plate out of the cabinet, then slid a portion of the contents of the pan onto it, and pushed the plate and a fork my way.
And don't worry, he said as he served himself. I'll wash the pan before your dad gets up.
Laughing, I dug into the zomblet with gusto. As I ate, Marcus pushed the newspaper toward me.
Y'all hit the front page, he told me.
I peered at the headline over my plate. Riot halts filming on movie set. Tucking into my brains and eggs, I skimmed the article. No known reason for the fight that broke out between several of the zombie extras. Numerous injuries reported, several aspects, filming to resume today. I read to the end. No mention of a death, so apparently Saberton had taken care of the body of the guy Philip killed. I wondered if they would take care of any footage that was shot as well. Sucks for the extras who are arrested, I said with a slight grimace. None of it was their fault. Marcus gave a nod of agreement.
Uncle Pietro will probably take care of that. It's in everyone's best interest for this to die down as quickly as possible.
I finished my breakfast, then jumped into the shower to clean up for my meeting with Pietro. When I got out, Marcus produced jeans, underwear, and a couple of shirts that I'd left at his place ages ago, which saved me from meeting Pietro while wearing the same donated clothing I'd worn the day before. I made sure there was non-brain food available for my dad, and then at 10 a.m., a black Mercedes pulled into the driveway. The driver wasn't Brian, so I obediently sat in the back when he held that door open for me, and apart from a few polite pleasantries, rode in silence to Pietro's house. To my surprise, it wasn't the same house Marcus and I had gone to months ago for the barbecue, but instead a very nice lakefront house, only about 10 minutes from Tucker Point. Even though it wasn't secluded in the sense of being far from other properties, it was surrounded on the non-lake sides by a couple of acres of woods, which added a strong feeling of privacy. Pietro was rolling in it, no doubt about that. No telling what he had for resources if he really was hundreds of years old. We pulled up in front of the house, and I managed to remember to wait for the driver to come around and open the door for me instead of barreling out on my own. I even followed politely as he went up to the house and rang the doorbell for me, though to my relief he stood back once he did so. Apparently I was allowed to speak and act for myself now that the hard part had been done.
I listened to the frogs' chorus from the lake as I tried to go over what I had to say to Pietro.
Dread twisted my gut. I knew damn well Pietro held all the cards, but I needed to make sure I didn't sell myself out completely. A tall brunette answered the door, slim and stylish, wearing dark maroon slacks and a conservative white silk blouse, with her hair in a soft updo. She gave me a warm smile.
Miss Crawford, I'm Angela Dane, Mr. Ivanov's personal assistant. It's so nice to meet you.
Personal assistant? Yeesh. Definitely out of my depth here. I took a deep breath and plastered a smile on for Miss Dane, reminding myself that I'd survived kidnapping, firefight, and zombie mayhem, so there was no need to be intimidated by the insistent reminders of Pietro's wealth and power. Yeah, right. I managed to respond with a polite greeting and then allowed Miss Dane to escort me to a room with a huge antique-looking desk, a couple of big wingback chairs, and one wall lined with shelves of old books. A huge window commanded a stunning view of the lake, and French doors led out onto a broad deck. Pietro sat in one of the wingbacks by the window and stood as I entered.
Angel, good morning.
Hi, I said. Sorry to bother you.
You're not,
he assured me, then looked past me to Miss Dane.
That will be all for now, thank you.
She nodded and withdrew, closing the door behind her. Pietro gestured to the other wingback chair.
Would you like something to drink?
he asked. Oh, no thanks, I'm cool, I said as I settled into the chair. I expected it to be uncomfortable, but it was far from it. You probably know why I'm here, right? He sat back down, picked up a cup of coffee from the table beside him, and took a sip.